Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again right now. When it comes to the NFL, nobody knows anything at all. And if you need even more proof, check out the Atlanta Falcons beating the San Francisco 49ers. Now, actually, check out the Atlanta Falcons, period.
Period.
The hell is with that crew. They start the year 1-1. Then they lose six straight. Then they beat New Orleans and Carolina. Then they lose two straight. Then they beat Carolina again. And then they have got to go across the country and not only hang with the 49ers, but play them close enough that they actually had a look at winning this game.
Matt Ryan for the win. No, Jones catches it, but not in the end zone. That looks like the ball crosses.
Looks like he breaks the plane.
Crosses the plane.
Now, obviously, when he comes down, he's outside
they're
of the plane.
They're winding the clock, and they're saying it's over, and the 49ers rush the field. Dan Quinn is saying, wait a minute. It's automatic review.
The previous play is under review.
They ruled him down, but this, as you said.
After review, the runner possessed the ball and broke the plane. Therefore, it is a touchdown.
And this.
Timer. Please reset the game clock to 2 seconds. The ball game is not over.
In other words, touchdown, Atlanta! And it turned out that they not only had a look at it, after the review, they won it. And then they chased it with this.
We're going to bounce it right at Samuel. He's going to throw it back. And to the far side goes Emmanuel Sanders, or no, Richie James. Now he's going to sling it backwards. Now Mostert's going to take the deep shot. Ball hits the ground.
Ball game.
And that is the ball game. And Olamide Zaccheaus is going to score.
See, the thing about that is, and I will get to it later on, that was not the ball game when the ball hit the ground. There's a lot more to it than that. But let me put that aside for a minute and talk about the fact that the Niners, who just beat the Saints in New Orleans, just lost to the Falcons in Santa Clara, which is crazy. That's crazy, but it's so NFL. Week to week, nobody knows anything. Week to week, you really cannot count on anything or anybody consistently. Like, say, for example, Dallas. Dallas was circling the drain after a miserable month. And just when we thought we were going to watch them all bleed out in the street, they rise up and they hang 44 on the Rams. Nobody saw that coming. Not you, not me, not even the Cowboys, and certainly not the Rams, or they would have done something about it. Nobody knew Jack about any of that. Any of that. Nobody knew Jack about that, and nobody knew Jack about the coin toss. The people who should know actually had no idea whatsoever.
It is heads. Dallas has won the toss.
Kicking it that way.
You want to kick?
We defer the second half.
Yeah. Okay, you're going to kick.
Yeah.
Which goal? You'll defend this end. Very good.
So Jared Goff, with a smirk on his face, once they get it all sorted out, says, that's fine. We will take the football.
What a joke. What an absolute joke. Dak Prescott has a roundabout way of saying defer, and either referee Walt Anderson did not hear it or just ignored it. I'm not going to say that the refs are so bad that they can't even call a coin flip, but the refs are so bad, they couldn't even call a coin flip. Then again, they were probably thinking, well, if we call it both ways, we've covered our ass. If we call it both ways, we can't be wrong. Because initially, the Cowboys were going to kick to start both halves. Then the league office had to jump in and confirm that Dak wanted to defer. And then at halftime, Anderson told both teams that Dallas would get the ball to start the second half. Well, sort of. Because according to Aaron Andrews, Sean McVay didn't learn about that change until he was coming out of the locker room to start the second half. I mean, that is a joke. What an absolute joke. In that case, it was a damn good thing that the Cowboys found their offense yesterday and they led it 28-7 at halftime. Because if that game had been close, it would have been an utter disaster if the Rams thought they were getting the ball only to have it ripped from them. And by the way, what did happen to the Rams? And what happened to the Cowboys? Jason Garrett looks like a damn genius for breaking out that cornball highlight reel earlier in the week. And apparently, if you liked his highlight reel, you're going to love the Saturday speech, because his guys did. Sean Lee, who had himself a day, went out. He said it was one of the best speeches I've ever heard from Garrett. And then he went out and he had his first pick in 2 years, his first solo sack in 4 years. And Jason Witten was doing things like this.
Prescott in the gun, back to throw, four-man rush, standing and throwing the ball to the right, and a nifty catch for Witten. It's a three, and three steps into the end zone for the GOAT. Touchdown, Witten and the Cowboys.
Cowboys radio. So the Cowboys beat the ever-loving crap out of the Rams. I mean, seriously, what got into these guys? Was it really just that highlight reel? And that Saturday speech? Because if so, Jason Garrett's no longer some ginger do-nothing, but freaking Newt Rockne, reincarnated. Fire him. Man, give him another 5 years, Jarrah. Better yet, let him tell you how much longer he wants to be there. Let him tell you how much longer you're going to be there, Jarrah. Let him tell you how much money he thinks he deserves, because he may have just saved your season. Well, at least until they run into the even more disappointing Eagles on Saturday night. And then who knows what's going to happen then? Freaking nobody, because nobody knows anything about this league this year. Except for this. There's only one lock. One stone-cold lock. The one thing that you can absolutely take to the bank in the NFL this season. Only one thing. The Bills Mafia. The Bills Mafia is incredible. Check out what I'm about to play. You don't even need to be watching the simulcast on CBS Sports Network to know how special this is. Just listen to the sound. That right there is from the Bills Twitter feed. And the caption is, quote, "It's 2 a.m., 25 degrees, and Bills Mafia still showed out." And Josh Allen going selfie with the crowd. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how awesome I think that is. How much I respect and admire the Bills Mafia. And they sure as hell did show out. Waiting in the middle of the night for the team to get home, they showed out, and so did their team. Playing their first Sunday night game in 12 years on the road in Pittsburgh, and they came back with a win and a playoff spot. They made life miserable for Duck Hodges. They forced four picks. They made it look like Mason Rudolph had snuck onto the field in a duck jersey. And then Josh Allen had the go-ahead TD pass with less than 8 minutes to go, and then the defense closed it out. Brass as hell. 10th win on the season, 6-1 on the road, and now you have a playoff berth. You do that, and you are going to get greeted at the airport at 2 a.m. in 25-degree weather. This is how the Mafia rolls. And you can't tell me that there is not a crew that deserves that moment more. Now, maybe the rest of you will start to give the Bills some respect, because they've earned it. When the Bills clinch a playoff spot, the Bears needed a win to keep their hope alive, and they nearly got it in the weirdest way possible. Let me go to them very quickly. Down 21-13, 1 second left on the clock. The ball on the Green Bay 34. The Bears did this.
They just set it up to Cohen, looking for some blockers. Tariq Cohen now is going to throw it backwards. Ball is dropped, coming up to get it. It's Trubisky making moves, still on his feet. This play is still going. Horstead's got it. Ball is loose on the ground, and it is going to be it. Ball game.
Holy crap, that was close. Those plays are almost always an embarrassing disaster, but not that one. In fact, not only did they nearly score, they should have scored. Bears fans, I don't want to be the guy to dump salt into your wound and tell you something you don't already know. But Allen Robinson would have scored. If Jesper Horsted lateraled that ball, Robinson is in the end zone, and you are going for two to tie it. Instead, Jesper. Jesper Horsted, arguably the best name in football, was tackled and fumbled. Game over. Playoff dreams over. Green Bay finds ways to win. Chicago finds ways to lose. Yeah, I know. Tell you something you didn't already know. Just know this. They should have scored on that play. Pretty much anybody other than the Bears would have scored on that play. But you know me. I'm here to keep it positive, to be upbeat, to lift you up and not bring you down. So, if you want a feel-good story, to get a bad taste out of your mouth, how about Eli Manning going out and getting a win in what is likely his last home game ever, and to get his career record to 500 and getting love from the fans.
Timeout taken by Miami. Pat Shurmur wanting to get Eli this well-deserved ovation.
That's nice.
16 years, two Super Bowl.
That's really nice. And if this is the That's nice. I like that. Or is it too nice? Is nice radio whack?
That's whack.
And boring. You want something truly whack and That's unbelievably whack. Boring? You want a feel bad story after that one? How about Urban Meyer showing up in Washington and sitting in the Dan's box? All right, so I'll finish that thought in a moment or two. There was Herb, just showing up and kicking it with the Dan. 1-800, a feel-bad story. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll-free. In addition to all of that, the Raiders get their own take. The Patriots get their own take. I've got thoughts on the President's Cup and more. But when we come back, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports, Charles Robinson, joins us. And there were some terrible beats yesterday, weren't there? Today's episode of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network. It is live 24/7, and it costs you nothing. That's right. Sports coverage that's always on and always free and always costs you nothing. CBS Sports HQ has coverage which is focused on the game, a ton of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something we all care about, gambling picks. Analysis to get that extra edge when you do want to get down. Like, I know that when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I'm going to get good intel, great tips, and trends that I need in order to win my bets. And don't forget, you can get access to all this amazing coverage free. I don't mean free for a week. I don't mean free for a month. I don't mean free if you have some special cable package. I mean completely free. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates. No manufactured conversations. Just sports for real sports fans at the great price of completely free. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. As always, I give you my complete NFL roundup to start the Monday program, but that's not enough. In fact, I've got a lot more for you, starting with this guy, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Good friend of the program, he is Charles Robinson. Charles, what's up? How are you?
What's up, brother? How you doing on Monday?
Good, good, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. We're heading into week 16. This is it. Home stretch, baby.
This is it. All right, so a lot of different spots where I could start, but why don't we start with the Dallas Cowboys, and before we even talk about the game, what did you make of the coin toss?
Well, I don't let Dak Prescott do any more coin tosses. I realized, look, the guy said kick, 27 times, and Walt Anderson's sitting there like, I know what he's trying to get. It's like the Jeopardy contestant who answers a question, but not in the form of a question. And right. Alex Trebek's like, are you an idiot? We've only done this for how many decades? I have no idea why Dak Prescott, he was clearly trying to defer. He just couldn't get the words out. But I think they made the right decision. He did say we want to defer to the second half before Walt Anderson officially made the decision, announced it to I guess, the world. And then the NFL did the right thing stepping in at halftime and correcting it, because everybody knew what Dak Prescott was trying to say when you listened to the audio.
All right, so I didn't exactly see that coming, but then again, I did not see Dallas putting up 44 on the Rams either. Jason Garrett had put together a highlight reel earlier in the week and then reportedly gave a really good speech on Saturday. So if you had to guess, how do you think Jerry Jones is feeling about Garrett right now after that win?
I mean, look, hopefully it's one win. I realize now finally they've beaten a team that was over 500. Now you're 1-6. Congratulations on the season in 7 games against, you know, teams that have a winning record. But look, at the end of the day, the Rams are a team that they've been up and down all season long. They're struggling. You know, they had a great game last week, but obviously Vegas coming into this one, Vegas put the line pretty close. And to me, that suggested that, you know, Vegas has always got the sauce. They know what's going on. And you know, the Rams' offensive line's terrible. It looked horrible against the Cowboys. Todd Gurley couldn't get anything done. And I continue to believe that the Rams are just a team. If you can shut down Todd Gurley, put everything on Jared Goff, there are going to be mistakes made. I think the Cowboys exposed that. But to me, look, you know, we'll see. I don't think Jerry Jones can't make any decisions off of this. If anything, I hope he looked at the film and says, hey, look how good we are when we have a balanced offense. Dak's not throwing it 50 times, and we can run the football. And, hey, maybe get Tony Pollard on the field as well in the backfield. Dallas did some things balance-wise that I think were good, but, look, I'm not buying the farm based on one win. That's, you know, Garrett's done far too little this season to all of a sudden change your mind based on one win over a team that's been struggling.
Charles Robinson is my guest. All right, so you mentioned Dak. You and I have talked about Prescott and his contract going back to the offseason. You've got a piece on Yahoo right now about the entire situation. Where do things stand with a Prescott contract?
Well, he's getting the franchise tag. I mean, the Cowboys have known it for months. You know, I had a chance to speak to someone there, and they flat out said, look, like, you know, we haven't talked to these guys in months. We haven't had a fruitful exchange really since the very beginning of the season in terms of actual, you know, financial figures. And then as the beginning of the season started to move forward and Dak got off to a hot start, his extension price went up. And, you know, they're arguing over years. They're arguing over total money. I mean, it really is just a mess. And I think it got to the point with Dak Prescott's camp where they said, look, just bet on yourself. They're going to franchise tag you this offseason. And the leverage only moves in your favor every single month or year after this. If you can have the kind of season, you know, where you flourish and you put up career numbers, this is only going to get better for you. That's exactly what Dak Prescott has done. I would not put the overall record on him. I think he has taken another step up. And to me, look, the Cowboys are either going to pay through the nose this offseason for the extension they want, or they're going to franchise them the next 2 years and then have to deal with it.
We're talking to Charles Robinson. All right, so let me get your thoughts on Urban Meyer, who was in Washington for the Eagles game. People are going to read that as a sign that he wants that job and maybe right. wants to spark some interest from the Cowboys as well. What do you make of the entire situation involving Meyer?
I think it's interesting that Terry McLaurin came out and said, you know, Urban Meyer was my guest. You know, this didn't have anything to do with, you know, visiting the team or my coaching status. Somebody's lying, okay? Because I'm going to tell you straight up, about the middle of last week, heading into the weekend, you know, there was definitely indications from Urban Meyer's camp that there might be interest from the Washington Redskins in him for their job opening. Now, to me, when I heard that, I thought that's not really – it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Anyone who has an opening, Urban Meyer, if you have a list of 10 coaches, Urban Meyer should probably be on it. You should have a conversation about that guy. You should probably pick up the phone and even talk to him. You know, so the fact that he shows up, whether he was Terry McLaurin's guest or not, if Urban Meyer is trying to, you know, indicate that, hey, I'm not trying to leverage the Cowboys, I'm not trying to drum up any kind of interest in myself, I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. Like, he can say he's playing chess, whatever. I think that's just a lie. I think Urban Meyer is very interested in the NFL. I think he's extremely interested in the Dallas Cowboys, as he said publicly. And, you know, I do think him schmoozing with the Redskins, whether or not he was Terry McLaurin's guest or not, only sends, you know, a signal to the Dallas Cowboys that, hey, if there is some interest here, you better move on it because I'm going to shop myself around to other NFL teams.
Yeah, by the way, I could not agree with that any more than I do. There's no way that he was just there at the behest of a former player or two. There's no way he was just doing right. something for somebody else. I mean, come on. We're talking about Herb here. All right, so we're talking also about the video that the Patriots shot on the Bengals sideline. You've got a piece up on Yahoo right now about the video and how the league is going to handle it. First off, what do you make of what you saw and heard on that video?
It's bad. I mean, it's deliberate. It's as deliberate. Like, in my mind, you know, we had heard heading into this weekend how deliberate it was. Hey, they were filming the coaches. They were filming the players. They were filming the sideline. You can, you know, you make all that up in your mind and you think, okay, when we saw the limited images of Spygate 1, that's exactly what they were doing. But then when you see it again, you know, the camera's panning, it's zooming, it's moving back and forth, it's keeping the entire sideline framed after player substitutions and package substitutions. And then, look, the audio did not help. Hearing them so eager to delete the footage, whether, you know, if it was an honest mistake or not, clearly they knew at that point, oh, you know, we really screwed this up. It's just baseline. It's terrible for the Patriots. And am I willing to think that, hey, maybe this was just an astronomical mistake by someone in the video department? Yeah, we've got a video department. I know there are producers who sometimes make mistakes. I think that could happen. But here's the bottom line. Nobody in the NFL cares. They're like, look, you already did this once. It doesn't matter. It's the mistake you can't make. And then you made it. You got caught. There's audio. There's video. It's out here. This looks terrible. Now I think the NFL's got to figure out, how do we punish the Patriots in a way that placates everyone else but also doesn't upset Robert Kraft to the point where he wants to go to war with us like he did on Deflategate?
I was going to say, that's my exact point. I mean, you've got a team that's got a history of this, but at the same time, we know Bob Kraft has got a history of punching back when the league looks to punish right. him. How do you think the league does approach this?
I think that's part of what's dragging on. When I was at the owners' meetings in Dallas last week, you know, I had a chance to talk to a league source. And I said, look, it's been, I think at that point, it had been like 3 or 4 days. I said, you got the tape. You have the tape. You've already done interviews. And you have the confession of the Patriots that, yes, we did do this. What's dragging on? Why is there no announcement at these league meetings? And this source said to me, look, it's Bob Kraft. Like, that's why. It's Bob Kraft. We got to be careful with this, because we don't want to trigger something with Bob Kraft. We're openly having war with the Patriots yet again. And look, Bob Kraft, make no mistake about it, he's been a handful. He's been a great owner business-wise. I mean, he's been a cornerstone. He's a deal broker. Top five owner, easily. I'm always told that's one of the guys you have to go to when you want to make deals in the NFL, no matter what it is. But at the same time, Deflategate, you had Spygate. You got Spygate now 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. You got the spa issue. You know, you've had a number of stories written historically about how the Patriots will do anything to get an edge. So he's definitely been a handful, you know, for the league. But he's also supported Roger Goodell when Jerry Jones came calling a couple years ago, going after Roger Goodell pretty hard in the paint with some lawyers. And, you know, so I think that factors in. But they're going to have to find something. I don't know if it's the Atlanta Falcons punishment for pumping in crowd noise in 2016, $350K and a fifth-round pick docked. You know, that's a healthy slap, not for a billionaire, but at least shows that the league's saying, we know this is wrong, you tried to do something to get an advantage, and we're going to punish you for it. I think it's got to be at least, that's the floor. $350K, fifth-round pick, that's the floor for what the league can do.
It's Bears Watching. Without saying, we'll see how that plays out. He is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. He is the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. And I'll say it again, good friend of the program. Charles, good job, man. Appreciate you.
Always my pleasure, Jim. Call me anytime.
You got it. I'll take you up on that. Well done. All right, so a lot of you Patriot fans are like, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's, if we're anybody other than us, it would be nothing. Right. If it were anybody other than you, it would be nothing. But it is you. And you've done it before, and you did it again, and you got caught. So it's not nothing. Absolutely, it's not nothing. It might be nothing to you, but it's not nothing to everybody else around the NFL, because just know this, every single team, every single owner is looking to see what the league is going to do. It's not nothing. So what punishment fits the crime? And if they're a repeat offender, what punishment fits the crime? Just know this, Chouts, it's not nothing. And it's not just going to go away. Clones, let me talk to you for a moment about Root Insurance. What if good drivers didn't have to pay for bad drivers? Root Insurance thinks that the old way of pricing car insurance is unfair. So Root developed a mobile app that measures driving behavior by removing bad drivers from the equation. That's how Root saved good drivers up to 52% in 2019. So gone are the days where your car insurance rate is based on your credit score, your age, your gender, your zip code. with Root. It's car insurance made easy. Using an app to base rates primarily on how you drive. That's how Root saved its good drivers up to 52% in 2019. Better drivers deserve better rates, and that's why the Root app uses driving behavior as the primary factor to determine car insurance rates. And in 2019, Root was the fastest growing direct insurance company in the United States. All you have to do is download the Root Insurance app, drive normally for a few weeks during the Root test drive, and then see how much money you can save. Don't wait. Give this a try. Head to the App Store, download the Root Insurance app, and sign up in less than 1 minute to start your test drive today. That's R-O-O-T. Again, download the Root app, R-O-O-T, and visit joinroot.com to learn more and see how much you can save. Root reserves the right to refuse to quote any individual a premium rate for the insurance advertised herein. Savings based on national reviews reported by actual customers. Form 1, not available in all states. This product is not available in California. He was a first-team All-Pac-12 player at UCLA. He was the 27th pick overall in 2016. Green Bay, 11-3, first in the NFC North, and they're at Minnesota next Monday. We are joined by Kenny Clark. Kenny, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, good. So I mentioned you had a huge game yesterday against the Bears. How good did it feel to come through with not one but two sacks in such a critical game?
Man, it was huge. You know, it was a big game, man. And you know, we want to just be playing our best football in December going into these playoffs. So it was just huge. I think I just started the tone for the whole defense, and we just kept it going through the rest of the game.
I was just going to say, you set the tone. What happened was, for those who missed it, you not only had a huge game, but you had a huge start to that game. You got everybody going on that second down sack in the first quarter. You made it look easy. Now, I know it's not easy, but take me through it. What did you see on that play, and how good did it feel to get home and bring down Trubisky?
Man, just watching film, just seeing the type of sets that 69 was going to give me. I kind of got a feel for him early, and I just kind of just took a chance and just had a cross chop and got a feel pretty quick, and then, you know, and then just finished on the quarterback. And, you know, it was great because, you know, Trubisky, he's an elusive quarterback. He can get all around the field. So for me to sack him, it was great.
Kenny Clark of the Packers joining us. You know, fans focus on sacks as the big stat, but every single pass rusher I talk to says people get way too caught up in that. You entered yesterday fourth in the NFL in quarterback pressures. So did you know it was only a matter of time before all that pressure would turn into sacks?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been pressuring a quarterback all year. I just haven't been getting the sack numbers that I have wanted early. So, you know, they come in bunches now, you know, these last two games, and hopefully I can finish out the season strong. But, you know, I've been consistently just getting at the quarterback, man. And, you know, that's what we taught to do up here, and I'm just trying to make plays for the team. And, you know, I'm just happy that now they come in bunches, and, you know, the sacks is getting on the stat line.
You know, it seems to me like in your case especially that if you take care of all that, the rest will take care of itself. In other words, you said something I thought was very interesting earlier this year. You said, I play with leverage, I play with my hands, I play with great technique, I play blocks well, and that frees up everybody. When you're doing stuff like that, it helps the defense out. I'm big on that, end quote. So when you look at it, how important is it that you stick to playing with your technique and you do your job in the scheme instead of being selfish and getting caught up in just chasing stats?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna let the plays come to me, you know, and that's the best way to win. And, you know, that's the best way to win. You know, you got to be unselfish. I feel like I'm a pretty good player in the league. And, you know, for me to show, you know, my other teammates that I'm going to be unselfish and you know, make plays whenever they come to me, and not go around chasing plays and trying to be a stat chaser. You know, it's only going to bring that around, you know, to the other guys that's around me. So, you know, I'm gonna keep doing that. I'm gonna make the plays that come to me, and you know, when I feel like I can take a chance and make that play, I'm gonna try my best to make it. But you know, it's just never been in me to go out there and chase plays. You know, I make the plays that come to me, and just try to do my best to help the team win.
Kenny Clark is my guest. So let me ask you this. I mean, obviously you've got amazing talent, but how much of the success that you're having is about the fact that your technique is strong? And is it like the small things like handwork and footwork that separate the great players from the good players?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. I mean, you know, because, I mean, everybody has talent in this league. And, I mean, it's all about, you know, the techniques and the hands. And, I mean, the best defensive linemen in the league, they use their hands and they use them effectively. So, like, I'm huge on – I mean, I work on it every day. I work on it every day before practice. I work on it every day during my individuals and during teams. So, like, you know, I work on my hands all the time, work on my feet work every time. So, it's huge, man. Technique is everything to me. You know, that's – I mean, since college, you know, I had a great, you know, technical coach in college. And, you know, and when I got to the league, you know, both of my defensive line coaches that I had in the league, you know, they've been huge technical guys. So, like, I'm huge on technique and trying to do things the right way and making plays that way.
We're talking to Kenny Clark. All right, so what about that final play? Chicago had that play, and they're lateraling the ball around. They're trying to get to the end zone, trying to give themselves a chance to tie it, and damn near did, right? What was going through your head as that play unfolded?
Yeah, man, that – I mean, it felt like it was designed. Like, they had that play, like, drawn up exactly how they did it, and – you know, it was a really good play, and I mean, I forgot what number he was. I think 49. If he would have pitched that last one, you know, they probably could have scored on that. So, I mean, we were all holding our breaths, man. And I know how I had missed the tackle on Trubisky, and I'm on the ground. I'm looking up. I'm still seeing him like pitching the ball. I'm like, man, somebody get this guy down. So. I didn't know how to react, man. I was just sitting there like, man, I just hope somebody get him down.
That's a great description right there. And you're right. I made that point before he came on that if they lateral it, they do put that thing in. I mean, it could have happened.
Exactly.
All right, so Aaron Rodgers was talking about, obviously, back in camp, how special the defense might be. He was talking about the addition of Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. You're third on the team in sacks behind the Smiths. What have they brought to the defense in terms of production, but also in the way they fit in with the chemistry of that team?
Well, I mean, production-wise, you know, they numbers speak for themselves. I mean, they're great players, man. They're explosive. You know, Z, he can do so many things. We can line him up everywhere, literally everywhere on the field. And then with Preston, he brings so many things. You know, he's rushing outside, and then he's just so explosive off the edge, and he can also drop. So we can do so many things in our defense with our front. And, you know, you see a lot of guys dropping. You see a lot of guys everywhere. So that only helps us out. And then the added leadership that they bring, too. You know, I truly feel like they help bring this team closer. You know, they just the locker room just been – it's been really good to be around. You know, everybody loves coming to work every day and spending time with each other. Everybody's having fun. We out here, we being ourselves, and it's just fun. And I think, you know, Z and Preston, you know, they brought a lot of that, you know, to our locker room. So guys love being around each other. You know, we have dinners, I mean, every other 2 weeks or something like that. Like, you know, we doing a lot of things together, and it's just something that we didn't do before those guys that came. So it's just pretty cool, man. And you know, it's cool to just be around these guys every day.
Kenny Clark, my guest. Kenny, before I let you go, I'm a Los Angeles native, and I remember the first time that I went to Green Bay back in the 90s, and I thought it was an amazing place, an amazing town. Kind of felt like a time warp to me, being an L.A. native. But as somebody who played their college ball at UCLA, what did you think when you first got to Green Bay, and what's it like to live and work there?
Man, it's a culture shock, man, definitely. I mean, the first time I seen snow was when I got out here my rookie year. So.
Wow.
So it's different, man. You know, I mean, of course, you know, LA, you know, it's a huge city. But you know, you get out here, it's more, you know, it's small. It's like, you know, it's a small town. You know, everybody pretty much knows each other, you know, in the city, in the town. You know, it's just different. It's just different. I mean, you walk in a grocery store, people asking you how your day going, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's just something that I'm not used to, you know, growing up, you know, in California and stuff. So, you know, California is so big, but it's definitely different, man. It's definitely different. You know, I love working up. I mean, I love, you know, going to work every day up here. You know, it's pretty cool. You know, the fans, they love us. You know, they're always into it. The games are always packed, and you know, it's nothing better than playing, you know, at Lambeau. You know, I truly feel like it's the best environment, best stadium in the world, and you know, it's just a great place to be.
Kenny Clark is my guest. All right, so one last thought. You're going to go to Minnesota next Monday night with a chance to win the NFC North. How do you go about approaching this game, and how fired up are you by the opportunity?
Man, you know, I'm fired up. I'm fired up, ready to go. And it's just, you know, honestly, it's a game that we got to go up there, and we got to take it, man. And, you know, nothing has been easy, you know, this season for us. You know, we've been winning, you know, these close games and, you know, playing some good football. So this game, we know it's going to be another tough game. And, you know, we're going to be prepared for it. We're going to be ready for it. And it's going to be a hostile environment, and we know that. And we're going to be well prepared and ready to go, man. It's going to be a huge game. It is a huge game. It's for everything that we want to accomplish. And since the first day, you know, Coach LaFleur stepped in the doors here, you know, he talked about winning the North, and that's our number one goal, is winning the North, and everything else will take care of itself.
It's right there. The opportunity is next Monday night, Green Bay at Minnesota. Packers coming off another big win. Kenny Clark had a huge game in that win. Kenny, it's so good to finally have you on the show. That was a great conversation. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, yeah, appreciate you too.
That was fun. Kenny, good job. Really good interview. Kenny Clark, Packers D lineman. We had tried to get him way back in the day, and something happened in terms of scheduling, nobody's fault. But that was really a good conversation. Great to have him on finally. So the Packers are 11-3. They're in first in the North, and they've got the showdown Monday night against Minnesota. All right, so right now is the time to call. It is the last week of the jungle year. Friday is the year in review, so you might call on that day, and you may or may not get through, but it's a different kind of call. So if there's something you want to hit, now is the time to do so. Contractors everywhere rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Access all this and more with the new Ferguson app, which allows you to order on the go. Find your nearest location and quickly scan product barcodes for easy reordering. With tools like this, it is no wonder why ordering with Ferguson is the easiest part of your hard day's work. Download today and get started. Did you see that the officials had to stop the Jaguars-Raiders game because Raider fan was shining lasers at the field? I would say that was a true Raider fan moment, but who knew those goons could operate or afford technology like that? Vince in Illinois wore the Jags, not just stealing the show, but stealing the last possible Raider party in Oakland. Smell you later, Coliseum. Alvin, where is the lady stealing the show?
They say they have the best draft in the entire NFL. Are you surprised to hear that?
Certainly not. The first year we took it to the limit. And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
It's been 20 years since then. We haven't been too strong in the last few years.
Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
I thought it was irate for a moment. Just kidding. Yes, I did see that. I did see that the officials had to stop the game because of the laser show. Again, just because I haven't mentioned it yet does not mean that I haven't seen it. It means I haven't mentioned it yet. And I will get to that in a minute. Also, coming up later on this hour, Mississippi State assistant coach Terrell Buckley. Now, you might be wondering, why are you putting on an assistant coach at Mississippi State? Because he's way more than that. T-Buck is a College Football Hall of Famer. He was the first draft pick of the Green Bay Packers back in 92. I got my first big break in radio in December of 1990. So in a way, T-Buck and I kind of came up together. He was one of my all-time jungle favorites. I don't play favorites, but Terrell Buckley was one of my favorites. And he was because of his outstanding playmaking ability, incredible athlete. And he would say things like, when he was asked, how many interceptions do you think you'll get in the NFL? He once said, the numbers 15 to 20 keep coming up in my mind. I don't know why. One of these years, maybe not this year, but one of these years, Some other man would say things like, you know what, I'm going to get 20 picks and believe it. So I always loved this guy's swag. I loved his rap. I loved his athletic ability. I loved everything about T-Buck. And especially how modest he was. You know that Lambo leap, the famous Lambo leap that people do? T-Buck was the one who originated that.
Well, you know, I used to do that in college. I did that against Michigan. I don't know if you remember that.
You know, with T-Buck, you made it up. Butler's getting all the credit, but you're the one who did that first, right?
Him and Robert Brooks and all those guys, I let them have it. You know, because they was my teammates. But I think I might have to show them the original thing.
Hey, T-Buck, were you the originator of that whole leap?
Yeah, you know I was.
So we would have conversations like that on the program. I would love it. The thing is, though, if you're a DB and you're on that island and you take chances and you've got amazing belief in your ability, you're going to get beat. The best get beat. The best do get beat. And he and I talked about how when he would get beat, what the reaction would be like.
If you got beat by Jerry Rice or Michael Irvin and you came back smiling, the media and the fans mistook that for you not caring.
I think so, because it's exciting. You're competing. I mean, I understand it's a business, but at the same time, Jerry Rice and Mike Irvin, them guys beat everybody else. I see them beat Dale Green, Deion Sanders, and nothing is said, but they beat me. It's like, what are you doing? You don't supposed to let him catch that. You suck.
My man, T-Buck. Knew I had to get him back. When I saw that he got into the College Football Hall of Fame, and well-deserved, I might add, because he was a Florida State legend, I knew I had to get him back. So he will be joining us at 40 past the hour. He is so funny. I've seen Jerry Rice and Michael Irvin beat Daryl Green and Deion Sanders, and nobody says anything. But when they beat me, it's like, what are you doing? You can't let them beat you. T-Buck, I'd say about 25 minutes and counting. 30 minutes and counting. Back to the Raiders. Yesterday was the final game for the Raiders in Oakland. Before I get to that game, does anybody remember when the Raiders were on fire? And Raider fan was talking about not just getting into the playoffs, but running down Kansas City, beating them down in their house, and ripping the AFC West. Do you remember when they were counting off the hours until they could go into their house and knock them the hell out and rip the AFC West in the process? Yet neither do I, because then they got smashed 34-3 by the Jets, 40-9 by KC, 42-21 by the Titans in a game where their D lineman got snot bubbled by a quarterback. Remember that play? And by the way, I digress. You see that tackle Kyler Murray made? Anyway, quarterbacks like Murray and Tannehill are knocking dudes out. But anyway, back to the Raiders. They come back yesterday and they play Jacksonville. It's the final game ever in Oakland. You think maybe they might be emotional for that game? You think that might be an emotional game? The last stand for the black hole. The last stand for the proudest, most intimidating fans in the NFL. They love their team. They love their team. And they love their town, and they were going to make sure the entire damn world knew it. If you are at all associated with the Raiders yesterday, if you have ever worn the silver and black, or painted your face, or worn spiked shoulder pads to a game, you want to close out that game and that time in Oakland the right way, on a memorable note. You want to give everybody something they would never, ever forget. And they sure as hell did. Not a good note, mind you, but an unforgettable note. The Raiders started that game with a 7-play, 75-yard drive that ended with this.
Over the middle, complete, first down, breaks a tackle. Williams is headed for the end zone. He's going to strut in front of the black hole. High stepping Tyrell Williams, 6th touchdown of the season.
Raiders radio, so far so good. Raiders 7, Jags nothing. Then Josh Lambeau had a field goal to make it 7-3. Of course he did. He was on the show this week. But Oakland got one of their own, 10-3, before the end of the first quarter. They add two more in the second quarter, and they make it 16-3 at halftime. Midway through the third quarter, the Raiders had 19 first downs. The Jags had two. The Raiders were dominating. Jacksonville had not been playing that well when they arrived. Then they were getting their asses handed to them by the Raiders and their fans. The rout was on. Oakland was going out the way they deserved to go out. The Raiders and Raider fans were going to party, and they were going to party hard. And what do you need for the ultimate rager? Lasers. And Raider fan had them. Had a lot of them. Had so many of them. And they were pointing them at the field so much that the ref literally had to jump in, rip the mic, and with less than 12 minutes to go in the fourth, tell them to knock it off.
Please stop using lasers aiming at the field. Do not aim a laser at the field, at the coaches, the players. Stop.
Interesting.
I mean, I could stop right there. And that would already be maybe the greatest moment in Oakland Raider history. If I stop right there. But he went on. He had more. Push the freaking button.
Please stop using lasers aiming at the field. Do not aim a laser at the field, at the coaches, the players. Stop.
How pissed. How exasperated is that ref? Like, he can't even believe that he's saying that. Like a parent who's sick and tired of his kids acting up. Man, I'll turn this car around. If you don't stop aiming lasers at the field, I will cancel this game.
Hit the crab.
Get. And if you think I'm kidding, try me. I will turn this stadium around so fast. Get.
Hit the crab.
Get.
Get.
I love how he runs down the list of places also to not aim the laser. Do not aim a laser at the field. Do not aim your laser at the coaches. Do not aim lasers at the players. Like he's talking to a kid. Again, would say, well, you didn't tell me not to aim it at the coaches. You said don't aim it at the players. Yeah, how about you, Raider fan? How about Raider fan running down their checklist before the game? You know, before you leave the house. You know it's going to be a long day at the stadium. You want to make sure you don't forget anything. Do you make your mental checklist and make sure you have everything on you? Wallet, check. Phone, check. Spiked shoulder pads, checked. Fifth of Jack, check. Laser, oh hell yes, check. So the Jags had made it 16-6 in the third. And then, with just over 5 minutes left in the game, they did this.
Minshew takes a snap from the gun, fires into the end zone, and it is a touchdown to Conley.
Well, that's two drives in a row. The Jaguars have driven down to get points. It's a sense of urgency this Raider team needs to feel right now. They're only going to be up by three once this extra point is pending.
The Raider radio team, very concerned, and well, they should be. 16-13 at that point. And now the panic is setting in a bit, and so is the rage. With just over 2 minutes to go, Raider fans broke out a bull bleep chant at the refs. And that was not the only thing raining down from the stands. More was about to come. But before that, the question was, could the Raiders really choke this game away? Could they choke away their last game ever in Oakland? And the answer is yes. Because with 31 seconds left, this happened.
Show and Blaze are coming. Burner drops the throw. Fires to the right side. The ball is caught. Touchdown, Chris Conley. Touchdown, Jacksonville. And the Jags have taken the lead with 31 seconds to play.
Jags radio. Jacksonville 20. Oakland 16. Defeat snatched from the jaws of victory with less than a minute to go in the Raiders' time. And not just their time in Oakland, but their time in California. And Raider fan was not happy. Raider fan was raging. But the Raiders did have one last chance.
Carr steps up, fires the Hail Mary high up into the air, right side of the end zone, jump ball up in the air, incomplete. And in the final act, the Raiders have lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the Oakland Alameda Coliseum. And the officials are being roundly booed as they leave the stadium.
They didn't just lose in their final game. They came from ahead to choke. Big difference. There you have it. One last kick in the junk for Raider fan. Not only are you losing your team, but you lost the final game, and you did it in the worst way possible by having a big lead and choking it away. And if I know anything about you, Raider fan, I know for a damn fact you're not having it. And you didn't. when that final pass bounced away, all hell broke loose. Remember the lasers and the bull bleep chants coming from the stands? That was child's play because there was nacho cheese. I repeat, nacho cheese. According to one report, it was a helmet full of nacho cheese. Meanwhile, Shayna Rubin from the Mercury News tweeted, Coliseum, brutal scene, nachos thrown on the field. The fans are booing. She followed that up with a pic of the end zone, and you can make out spilled nacho cheese on the silver and black grass. Raider fan went next level with it. Raider fan was weaponizing their nachos. And no, I don't know whether or not Chunk Gruden made a beeline for the free cheese. I don't know. I don't care. I just know there was more. A lot more. Remember when I played that clip of the Bills Mafia at the airport at 2 a.m.? And I said, you don't even need to be watching TV to appreciate the clip because the sound told the story. Well, check out this sound. That was not the sound. We could play the Name That Sound game. Most of you would say, yeah, Rome, that's like a 747 taking off, right? No, that was not the sound of a jet taking off. That's the sound of the black hole responding when Raider players came over to salute them. Raider players like Derek Carr and others went over to pay tribute to the black hole, and the black hole paid tribute right back by booing the living hell out of them. Their own guys. They're coming over to say thank you, I love you, and they're booing them like they want to fight them. So far, the list of things coming from the stands includes lasers, bull bleep chants, and a helmet full of nacho cheese and booze. And now it's about to get worse because you can add to that list fans. You know what else ended up on the field? Fans. Lots of fans reportedly ran onto the field and had to be detained by security. So it goes without saying, it's never okay to use lasers, throw trash, and perfectly good helmets full of nacho cheese. And also not good to run onto the field. Totally out of line. Totally trashed. Totally inappropriate. But I know Raider haters are going to love seeing that. They're going to see those pictures of Raider fans being led off the field by security, walking through trash and around the nacho cheese, and Chunk scraping the cheese off the grass and putting it back onto his chips. And they're going to say, hey, Rome, why aren't you bumping autumn wind under that? I'll tell you why, losers. Because I'm not here to celebrate it. That was a horrible end to a great run in Oakland. And no, I'm not going to say that that was the most Raider way to close out time in Oakland, nor am I going to say that blowing a lead, having fans break out their lasers and their cheese, and then jumping onto the field was the most fitting Raider ending ever. But I will say this, to end this monster block and this monster take, don't even bother trying to replicate that in Vegas, because you can't. You can't duplicate it. Don't even try. Just listen to Gardner Minshew talking about his experience there.
Probably saw more middle fingers today than I have in my whole life. But they have a good time, man. And, it was fun to ruin that fun.
He said, I probably saw more middle fingers today than I ever have in my life. There will never be a scene like that ever again. It's sad as hell. Amazing fans, they deserve a hell of a lot more than what ownership and their team just gave them. Because ownership and their players and their coaches just gave them the biggest middle finger ever in the form of a choke job. And don't email or tweet at me with, hey, Rome, the nacho cheese was just for Chunk. Don't do it. It's knock on wood if you were with him, not cut the curd and feed him. He is a very good friend of the program. He is Terrell Buckley. T-Buck, my man, how are you?
Oh, man, I feel really, really good after that introduction.
T-Buck.
Everything good. How are you doing?
Great, dude. I'm great. T-Buck, it's kind of funny. I don't want to make it about us, But the fact is, you and I kind of came in together, and they put us in our respective Hall of Fames in the same year at almost the same time. That's kind of weird, man. They put me in the Radio Hall of Fame, and they put you in the College Football Hall of Fame. It just seems fitting because we did come in together.
There you have it, man. Welcome to the jungle. I love that introduction. I remember that like it was yesterday in 1991, 92. So I'm excited for you. And I was very excited about going into the hall in New York this past week. So it's exciting time.
I appreciate you.
It's great to be in the jungle and to be us.
It is great to be in the jungle and to be us. Perfectly said. Terrell Buckley is my guest. All right, so last week you were inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. Lots to talk about, but bring me up to date. How did it feel to go into the College Football Hall of Fame, and how is life?
I mean, life is great. To have my kids there, Sherelle, Brianna, and Brittany, my mom, Laura, my fiance, everybody that's been a part of it. Florida State coach Mickey Andrews, the greatest defensive back coach ever. To have that and be around that atmosphere, and also the guys that I went in with, from London Fletcher to Troy Polamalu, Patrick Willis, these guys, Terry Holt, and then to be able to take a picture with Ronnie Lott, that was like icing on the cake. It was tremendous. I'm very blessed, and I was very excited.
Terrell Buckley joining us. T-Buck, what about Ronnie Lott? Why? What did you think of him as a player and a man, and why did that mean so much to you to get a picture with him?
You're talking about a versatile athlete. Played corner, then he moves to safety. He cuts off his pinky. He wants to go back in the game, and he wants to keep banging folks. He spoke it. He played hard. He played tough, and he made a bunch of plays, and he played for a winning organization. So everything about him, you look and you say, I want to be like that. I want to do the things that he did, except cut that little finger off, the tip of my finger. I ain't want to do that now.
T-Buck, what about that, right? I mean, it seems like it's more lore, it's more legend, but it's true. The man took off a tip of his finger to play in a game. Who else would do that? What does that tell you about that guy?
I tell you, he's the real deal. He is tough. All the sayings you want to say, animal, loves the game, won't let his team down, all that, he is the epitome of that. He embodies that. And I want to make sure that I had something to say. Hey, I knew him. Now that, here's the picture. So it was very, very exciting.
I love it. Terrell Buckley is joining us. And T-Buck, if we were to go all the way back to your days coming out of Pascagoula High School, you went to Florida State. Mm. Deion Sanders had left, but he set a standard. So what were your expectations when you arrived at Florida State? Did you look at what Deion did as a challenge?
Without a doubt. If obviously, arguably the greatest defensive back, the greatest athlete that stepped in Tallahassee, also Rome and the NFL field, and to have a relationship with him. We still talk and still do things. For him to set a standard that saying this is what a corner, a DB, supposed to look like or play like. And he coming into that, having the same coach, same practice field, same technique, same saying, it was a challenge. And I felt like any great competitor would love to be part of that challenge. Talking about how hard D worked, you know, all the little things that you say, okay, if he did it, if it was good enough for him, surely it's good enough for me. So let me get at it. Let me put in this work. And that was my attitude. And that's what pushed me through. And also adding this, besides Deion, getting a chance to play with Leroy Butler, who should be in the Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame, getting a chance to play behind him my freshman year was another thing that set the standards high that I really, really appreciate about Florida State.
We're talking to Terrell Buckley, Super Bowl champion, College Hall of Famer, and obviously had some amazing times and years at Florida State. T-Buck, one of the things I always respected about you and your game, we could talk technique, we could talk athletic ability, but I always loved your confidence. Where did that confidence come from?
Well, if you look at it, I've won a championship at every level. So teams, from Pop Warner all the way to the NFL. And at every level, part of that, I was a major part of that, making plays. You know, I tell my guys now, I never strive to make plays. I was a playmaker. I know Michael Irvin had the nickname Playmaker, but also was a playmaker. And the thing was, the receivers, they might make a few plays, but at the end of the day, I was going to make more plays because I was, at that time, I say I am a playmaker. And through the history of me, for as I can remember going back, that's all I did. I made plays. I made plays against the 6'4 guys. I made plays against guys my size or smaller. So inside of me, when you combine the hard work, I'm a show up early, stay late, that I didn't really have a choice but to make plays. That's where that came from.
T-Buck, I'm in a time warp, man. I feel like you just took me back to 1992. I'm busting out in the jungle with T-Buck, and we're talking ball. It is so awesome. There's this legendary play. As long as we're talking about you being a playmaker, a legendary play against Michigan where you picked off Elvis Gerback, and as you were running it back to the end zone, you were showing the ball to every Wolverine player. What do you remember about that play?
Oh, it was awesome, man. That was a big week, obviously, going to Ann Arbor, playing against I forgot the rankings. They was 2 or 3, or we was 1 and 2. North versus South, big versus small, speed, Desmond, Heisman, trophy contender, I mean, all that type of stuff. And to get that, second player of the game, they run a hitch. At that time, I don't know if they did, they really scouting report. Out of everything I did well, I could read that 3-step. And they run a 3-step on the general. In my prime, with the attitude I had, and I jump it, show it to them, jump into the stands, the original Lambeau leap. We call it now the Seminole leap. That was awesome. That was one of those moments that I'll never forget.
We were talking to Terrell Buckley, one of my favorite moments of your career. So when you're coaching young corners now, how tempting is it just to turn on your highlights and show them and say, this is how you're supposed to do it?
Oh, it's very tempting, and they get that. You know, what ends up happening, we end up having a big discussion. I ain't going to call it argument. And they talk about what they can do and how tough it is nowadays and who make plays and all that stuff. And after probably 2 months of listening to that, I sent them out a text. Now we talk, we do stuff by text. I sent out a text and tell them to bring popcorn and bring their 3D glasses because we're going to have a show to watch today. And it might take 10, 15 minutes to get through this show. And I put that tape in, and when it's over, all their mouths drop, and they're like, oh, my God, Coach, I didn't know. And then I tell them, well, I used to tell them to call me the general. Now they have to call me Mr. HOF.
And now they know. Mr. HOF, now they know.
Now they know.
T-Buck, the thing is, you could have done so many things once your career was over, your playing career, but you chose to go back to school and get your degree and get into coaching. Why was that important to you?
Oh, it was awesome. While I was playing ball, I was only in school 5 semesters. So I needed 75 hours to graduate. And that was, you know, once you set your goals, and I have standards, and myself and my mom, we talked about it, I was still taking classes while I was playing ball. I never stopped. And as soon as I retired, I wanted to get my degree from Florida State, and I went back and finish up and meeting with Coach Andrews and Coach Bowden. That was the start of it. To be able to give back and tell these stories and have what I just described about the popcorn and talk to the young men about life after football and what's truly, truly important was huge to me. Besides playing golf all the time, which I was doing a lot and listening to us, the players that the older guys talk about how bad the current players was doing and we had it so much tough back when we played. I wanted to be the guy that had an answer, had a solution, and to give back versus just talking about today's generation and what are they and how bad they are. I didn't want to be that guy. And that probably the main reason I got into coaching was to bridge that gap.
Terrell Buckley is my guest. I'm glad you mentioned golf. I want to end on that because you were always, still are, an amazing athlete, but I know you love to swing the sticks. There's a story from back in the day. On the golf course, you were beating Michael Jordan. What were the matches like, and what was it like beating MJ, and how did he take that?
Well, this is the thing. We had a big group. So my guy that I always played with was Lawrence Taylor, and Lawrence Taylor obviously is a pretty darn good golfer. So when Jordan would come in town, we would split up. You know, you had the – and I got another group. We used to compare the scores, and my score was better sometimes. Sometimes it wasn't. But they had – it was a couple groups, and it was based on how much gambling was going to be going on. So, obviously, Jordan was in that higher bracket of the gambling part. So we used to get together after the round – and put the scorecards in there. But I'm going to tell you this. One of my goals of golf when I'm done coaching is to see can I make the senior tour. That's my next.
You're serious about that?
That's on my bucket list. That is one of those things that if Tomo Romo can go out there and do it, I think I can do it.
Can't wait to see that, T-Buck. And I know you can do it. 3-time All-American, Jim Thorpe Award winner, led the nation in INTs and return yardage. I can go on and on. 14-year NFL vet, Super Bowl champion, and a member of the College Football Hall of Fame class of 2019. I don't know, T-Buck, you and I, we get a little bit older. We get a different perspective. I love you, man. That was such a great conversation. I have no idea why we did not do that sooner, but I'm so glad you and I got caught up like that. And congrats on going into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you so much. And yes, we should have done this a lot sooner. But at the end of the day, much love on this side. I appreciate everything you're doing. I'm proud of you and congratulations.
Rick in Buffalo. Brother, what's going on, Rick?
I'm flying so high today, Jim. Not even the sight of Hawk's ugly face can bring me down. And as the old saying goes, Buffalo had itself one hell of a night. Not long after the Goo Goo Dolls rocked the lid off this town, our beloved Bills punched their ticket to the postseason party. And there was nothing better than celebrating with my guys Johnny and Robbie after the show. You should have seen it, Jim. The chicks were all over me. And how about that Blizzard Bills defense last night? This unit's been so dominant, it's making the 85 Bears look pedestrian. And since a killer defense always travels well in January, I just booked my flight to Miami for Super Bowl week. I'll see you on Radio Row, Jim Brony. And how about the news coming out of New England last week, Jim? The only thing funnier than Hoodie saying he had zero knowledge of it was that pathetic fan base full of front runners eating it up. How deaf, blind, and stupid does one have to be to buy what the Hood's selling? But the fact they stood behind a murderer and a human trafficking pervert, it stands to reason they fully support a liar and a cheat. It's about time the NFL takes a page out of the NCAA's playbook and start taking away tainted titles and doling out postseason bans. But we all know Goodell's going to cover for his big boy Bob again. Friggin' coward. Were the Bills defense bringing the house every single play this Saturday? Putting Brady in the ground, then shoveling dirt on his corpse. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and the crew, Jim. And as always, thanks for the vine. I'm out.
Rick in Buffalo.
Good night now.